Welcome to Webcology. Webcology is the show that takes you into the deepest and darkest ends of the ecosystem on the internet. Our guides will take you on a journey into web marketing and bring you the experts and the information so that you can further explore the web marketing world. Now, here are the hosts of Webcology, Jim Hedger and Dave Davies.
Welcome to Webcology on WMR.fm. It's the 20th of January, 2022. This is Jim Hedger from Digital Always Media, Dave Davies from Beanstalk Internet Marketing, and as promised, we have an interesting show for you. We have in the house, sitting live in the interview chair right now, Danny Goodwin, editor at Search Engine Land, yes. Formerly editor at Search Engine Journal. Danny, welcome to Webcology.
Great to be here, Jim and Dave. It's been a while since I've been on the show, and I'm happy to be back finally.
It has been a while since you've been on the show. It got me thinking, when's the last time I actually talked to Danny in person, like live, face-to-face? If I remember correctly, it was a car park at the Hilton in New York City, Hilton Times Square.
It could be that. I wasn't sure if it was that or maybe the last SES Toronto. The infamous last Toronto SES event where I believe you correctly predicted there would never be another SES Toronto.
Yeah, I forget the shenanigans we got up to, and that's probably why there's not going to be another SES. that group of party girls at that speakeasy we ended up at 4 a.m. Sure, there would never be another SES Toronto. But that's another story for another time. The web marketing world, the conferences, all of that was a circus. It was like the Grateful Dead shows, except business-like. Danny, what the hell? Okay, a couple of weeks ago, about a month ago, you start teasing us with, I got a big announcement, something's coming. Yeah. And earlier this week, I think it was Monday, yep. The publisher of Search Engine Land put something up. Ha! We got them! And it became apparent that you were leaving Search Engine Journal.
Yes.
The next day, you published a LinkedIn piece, which characterized your departure as more of a divorce than an agreement. What's up, man? What happened?
It's a bit of a long story. I'll dive into parts of it. First off, I would just like to say that I absolutely loved my time at Search Engine Journal. We had a lot of great years, a lot of success, a lot of great memories. Built a really great team there. I'm very proud of all the work we did there. But you know, and just thinking about how things sort of were progressing there for myself, I don't want to say getting more pushed toward a certain direction, which was more toward the executive level, which is not really my thing. So there was sort of this feeling that I should be more at that level versus doing the editing and writing sort of stuff, which is the stuff I love. So it sort of got to this weird point where there was almost a point of no return. And I just really didn't enjoy the leadership management level stuff. So I wanted to kind of get away from that. Sort of made the decision at that point, you know, while I love the team, I just could not see a path forward, at the company. So yeah, it was a really weird position to find myself in after all the great work and things we had done together that we couldn't figure it out. And then, you know, I go and talk to the people at Third Door and within a week, you know, they're like, oh, I know what to do with you. So it was just like that kind of weird realization that and I hate to make the comparison of a Tom Brady leaving a team to go to another team, but you know, it's like that, you know, it's like you get somebody in sports and you know, you have the great Bill Belichick and Tom Brady, you think they should be working together forever because of all the success, but you know, stuff happens on the back end and just sort of go, well, maybe there's something better out there. So,
well, let's go from past to future. Sure. It's linear is often the easiest way to get from A to Z. So, sure. You've had a to this point, There's quite a bit more to come, but you've had a storied career up until now. How many publications have you edited for?
In Search, I've now hit all the big three, basically. So I started at Search Engine Watch after Danny Sullivan had left. That's sort of where I grew up and got mentored by Mike Green and Jonathan Allen, a few other people along the way there. But yeah, that was my entry into Search and just learning everything. And I just loved it. So I just ate it up and started doing all the things. And yeah, here we are today. So yeah, so I started Search Engine Watch. Took a little break from Search publications for a sidestep to LinkDex, which I think I announced on this program when I was leaving Search Engine Watch. So yeah, that was an interesting couple of year thing that I definitely picked up some learnings from. I wouldn't call it a fun time, but it was a time that I definitely learned a few more things, and it was editing. It was basically doing the same role for a brand publication that no longer exists, unfortunately. And then, yeah, moved on to Search Engine Journal. I actually sort of started there. I was doing a whole bunch of freelancing after I left LinkDex and picked up news writing for Search Engine Journal. Really liked the company, the people, did that for about a year. And then Kelsey Jones was leaving as executive editor at the time. So I just sort of threw my hat in the ring, you know, said, hey, I used to do this stuff at Search Engine Watch. I think I did a pretty good job at it. Would love to try it out here. And basically the CEO asked me to come up with sort of a content editorial plan, which I did, and she liked it. So yeah, that's sort of how that all just started.
Well, and in that, when was that? That would have been what, 2016
is when I went to SEJ for the news writing. About a year later, I officially got the job as executive editor.
In that time, SEJ ballooned. It went from being a important publication to one of the critical publications, and then truly became one of the big three. And its focus ballooned as well.
Yes,
it went from just publishing a daily news sheet to actually holding it in your time. It's now organizing its own conferences.
Yep.
That was a meteoric rise, and I'm surprised it was only 5 years, 5 or 6 years.
Mm.
What propelled all that?
I'd say it's a mix of things. So when I started at Search Engine Journal, I wouldn't say that they were like a tarnished brand, but you know, they had some issues in terms of content quality over the years. You know, I think back, one of my favorite ones was they came up with this fake update. I forget what it was called. It was some sort of, it was during the time of like Panda Penguin, all these others. They came out with this, which was apparently an April Fool's joke, but anyhow.
I think I gotta ask, with sympathy, it's so funny, but it's going to lead to some unsympathetic question. Well, not anyway. I think every person in our listening audience right now, myself included, I'm sure Jim as well, when you're talking about, and now I'm a manager. I think everybody who's ever been an entrepreneur of any kind is like, oh yeah, I know that trap. I know that, like, I started something to do what I really love, and now I'm managing. Like, I think so. I think everybody in the audience can sort of sympathize with that, like, oh, okay. And then you end up doing a thing that's like, oh, I'm not doing that thing that I went in to love.
Sure.
How, as you enter a new venture, do you go, here's where I don't cross again, right? Like, here's how I don't do that again. Do you have a plan heading forward that, and maybe our listening audience can go, need to take some notes now because I'm about to do that?
Yeah, that's it's a really tough one, because it's almost like the whole thing with the frog and the boiling water. You know, you turn up the temperature by 1 degree every so often, and before you know it, you're cooked. So it's tough. I would say, like, I guess, like, now looking back, I can sort of say, like, there was just that moment where you just sort of go, once you start complaining about your job a little bit, like, even if it's just like, you know, within a coworker, like, oh my God, I can't believe this happened. Like, I never had those moments. And then once those started, it just kept coming and coming and coming. If that makes sense. So yeah, I would just, you know, make sure that you're doing the things that you enjoy and that your enjoyment level is at a certain point. because ultimately, you know, we're here for a really short time on this planet. So we shouldn't be not enjoying what we're doing.
That's probably great advice for anybody in any circle of life, if you can pull it off.
Yeah, it's tough to do.
Just do what you do. Do what you love. Yeah. Now, what I mean, it's a natural sort of leap, right? Like to me, I was like, you know, when I found out and heard it, you know, where you were going, I'm like, okay, this just it makes sense that you would go from one to the other. Were there any other sort of publications or maybe in a completely different sector? Like, was there anywhere else that you were like, oh, that'd be neat to go over there and do something? Or were you just like, I love these people in Search, right? Like, I need to hang out with them.
Those more. Characters.
You know, I really do love Search. Like, I, you know, when I announced that I was leaving, I had a couple of really interesting opportunities pop up, but I sort of, and I even said this when I was interviewing with the people at Third Door, I referenced Moneyball. There's a scene at the end where Billy Bean goes to visit the Red Sox and he's meeting with John Henry. And, you know, he's like saying, oh, you just had all this great success at the Oakland Athletics, did this great stuff on a really small budget. Why are you meeting with me? And it's like, because it's the Red Sox. And I sort of just had that moment where I was like, that's what I sort of felt like going to the Third Door in Search Engine Land. It's, you know, in its heyday, Search Engine Land was the publication that everybody wanted to be. They were huge. They were sort of what Search Engine Journal, you know, I wanted that to emulate, you know, just that level of authority and influence within the industry. And that's what I hope to bring to Search Engine Land, you know. Just bring back all that authority and expertise and bring in a bunch of new contributors. We're going to be restarting our contributor program. We want to get the community back involved as much as we can with the site. Going to continue to do SMX events. There's a lot of great stuff coming. So I'm very excited about it.
Well, that does beg the question. How do you take a ship and turn its course? And this is something I guess a new editor has to do when they come on board any publication. When you go into this, do you got a game plan? Like, do you have a vision of what you want to do at Search Engine Land and how you want to do it?
I do. I recognize, though, you know, obviously I'm not the only voice in the room. I just want to make sure that I clearly, like, I have plans. I have like some big plans that will probably take some time to show, but yes, I do have, I sort of have like this, like, where do I when I approach this, I go, where do I want to be in a year from now, maybe 2 years from now, 5 years from now? And how do I get there?
Well, and that's a little hard to plan out right about
it
now.
Is. Yes.
The business model that a number of our publications at Webmaster Radio was built on, is, broken. that's no other way to phrase it. It's very hard to get the sponsorships that used to keep the media and keep the machine running. The conferences are all but gone for now. They may or may not be back in the future, and when they do come back, it's going to be normal is something we don't know what normal is going to look like. So given that, how do you make plans?
Yeah, I mean, COVID was kind of crazy. We didn't know how it was going to impact us at SEJ at the time. Luckily, you know, when everybody has to go work online, that benefits us because we're an online publication. So, you know, COVID was weirdly like, it was kind of a boost to us, you know, because we were worried about ad revenue dropping. It didn't, went up. Worried about pages went up. Like, everything went up in COVID. So, you know, we were kind of lucky in that, you know, I even was telling everybody at the time, you know, I've been preparing for a pandemic since 2007 when I got into this industry because I've been self-isolating for years. So, yeah, it's just one of those cases where, you know, everybody had to make that sudden pivot to online, especially, you know, so many retailers and local businesses, they had to figure out, you know, what do I do now? You know, I can't sell my stuff to people in person. and they had to make that shift to online. So it was good in that sense. I know that virtual events are going to continue to be a thing for Search Engine Land this year. So there's going to be five. They're going to all be virtual and all free. I don't know if I'm allowed to say that yet, but here's some breaking news. They're going to be all free. all free SMXs this year. So that's exciting to see. But yeah, I mean, luckily things are set up the way things are set up at Third Door. They have a pretty good content arm that has a lot of, you know, sponsored content. Like, you know, they do research reports and all these other types of good content that are sponsored and sort of pays all the bills. So they're in good shape there. So that sort of frees us up on the editorial side. There's a very good split with Third Door between editorial and sales. So they kind of let us do our thing on the editorial side. So yeah, as long as, you know, it's all about serving the audience in the end. You know, we want to make sure that we're hitting all the people in SEO, digital marketing, the people that rely on us for information, because the world is ever changing. We want to help them sort of navigate that and advance their careers and make more money and all that good stuff. So that's the role I see us sort of fitting in, is just to be that resource for people who need that help and guidance in crazy times like we're in right now.
Do you? It's funny when you said that, because it sounded a little like a, like listening to a Google Ads rep. I was like, oh, Danny.
Oh, no. In the industry, like,
no, we have a good separation of our sales and our editorial. Well, like, we're reflecting back now just in a great and fun way. Your career, and as we discussed earlier, can sort of be like, this would be entering stage four in the publication in the SEO realm, sort of space of things. And as we've been talking, in just this one, or maybe as a whole, but sort of clarify, what's been one of the funnest stories? Like, you've covered a lot. What's sort of your one where you were like, I am just so excited to put this out. I just want to publish right now. Or is there one?
Yeah, I mean, so honestly, it doesn't have my byline on it, but it was sort of, I had this idea way back, and we were able to finally pull it off at SEGA this last year. So the Ranking Factors ebook, which I think you're familiar with it. I'm sure there's some controversy, and I've seen plenty of debate about individual chapters from it, and I know that's out there. But that ebook was sort of my dream for multiple years, just to get it out there. So I had sort of envisioned it as a sort of self-contained PolitiFact style thing, where it's like, okay, everybody says this is a ranking factor. Let's actually look at evidence out there, you know, whether it's anecdotal or statements from Google, et cetera, et cetera. So, yeah. So we have been talking about it for a couple of years. We finally were able to pull it off last year. It was exciting, like pulling that together, just doing all the research on it. We had just, the writers were great, just reviewing it as everything was coming in. That was just so exciting, the whole project. The best part to me too is that it got received so well. It was our best performing ebook ever at SEJ. So yeah, it was just that, you know, it's not a story, but that project for me is super special. And it was like one of those things, you know, it was so difficult to pull together too, that it was like, it really bonded everybody who was writing for it. You know, we had Anna Crow writing on it, Christy Hines, Miranda Miller was writing on it, and a couple other people. I'm sorry, I'm drawing a blank. It's early morning. But yeah, I mean, it was like a really bonding experience. And we had our project manager sort of keeping us all on track, Christina Robichaud. You know, because we had our moments during that. We're like, oh god, are we gonna finish this thing? Because we're looking at it, we got 20 chapters done. Okay, we have 60 more to do. So she was sort of like our cheerleader, sort of keeping us on track. And I was like, oh, it was kind of like one of those magical things that I was just so happy to see actually come to life. And like, I even from the start, like, I envisioned it as this thing where it's like when you land on the actual page, because we always republished our chapters in two pages. Later on after a couple months. And like, I had always envisioned this sort of I don't know what you call it, like one of those bouncing meters where it's like, you know, you have all the different things that it could land on. So like when you get to the bottom of the page, it sort of goes, is this a ranking factor? Confirmed, unconfirmed, maybe, definitely not, et cetera, et cetera. So like it was just like one of those projects. I had all of the parts in my head and it was good to see it actually out in the world. So, yeah.
You know, it was funny. I remember, I think you'd asked me to proof some of them. Like you had a few people proofing it, which was a great idea. Yep. And it was actually funny because it was a bunch of that was on a drive up to Whistler. I was just like working through proofing it, which is funny because that's where I am right now. Mm-hmm. But I remember when you asked and when I first got them and thinking to myself, what kind of train wreck is this going to be? And it's not like I know that
all
the authors were talented, but I think any SEO in the audience would go, oh, somebody's trying to go, these are the known factors, right? Like this is just going to be a horrible, horrible thing that I'm going to disagree with half of the things that I'm about to read. But it was really, really well done. If people haven't read it, it is good. You may disagree with certain parts.
Yes.
You've noted that earlier that like you might think something is, and but the authors did a really, really good job of going, here's why I think that.
Yeah.
And here's why I'm saying that. Here's what Google said. Here's where I think they're full of BS. Right? Like here's exactly what's going on. So it was a really, really good read.
Yes. And Matt Southern was the other one. I wanted to give a shout out to him because he did a lot of the chapters as well.
Yeah. Always does actually. Like 90% of the stories I've ever shared from SCJ, it's either Roger or Matt.
Roger or Matt. they're a great news team, man. I'll tell you what. But you know what? You know, we're not too shabby with Barry over at Search Engine Land. So, you know, it's not
how do you edit Barry Schwartz besides punctuation and spelling? How do you edit that guy?
That's basically it, man. You know, Barry's going to Barry. So
Barry's going to Barry. Yeah.
you can only hope to contain him. That's about it. I mean, he's great. Like you know, I've never worked with him, so like I've only worked with him for 2 days, and I love it already. So he's like a wealth of information, and he's just so tuned in to everything. It's like, you know, I was like, should I get a tool or just listen to Barry for monitoring news? And was like,
hey, we've been doing it for 17 years,
I know. I don't think we've ever managed to get, and we've mentioned Barry's name, I don't know, probably 5 times, 10 times in this episode alone. I don't think we've actually made it through an episode without going, and as Barry said, he does a great job. One of the things that I think it'll be really interesting for you as well, and great that you will have an easy job of proving his work. But his memory is always outstanding me. Like whenever I'm on Twitter and I'll like ping him going like, I'm just seeing a new thing. Like, is this a thing? And it'll be like, oh yeah, they were testing this, and like share some like article he'd done in like 3 years ago. I'm like, if I was reporting on 8 things a day, I don't know that I'd just be able to like pull out of my Rolodex, just dating myself with the word Rolodex there. I don't know that I'd be able to just go, oh, it's this one, and I know I've seen it. Like his memory is
Barry remembers that somebody's grandfather had an idea back in 1973 and he can cite it. I'm serious.
Yeah, he's sort of the Bill Slosky of just general knowledge.
So you're building a content team again. You're starting from, it sounds like you're starting not from scratch necessarily, but from base zero.
Yes.
Is there any topics that are new and interesting and that you think SEL should be focusing on?
I mean, I don't, you know, the sad part is like in our industry, nothing is really that new. Like, you know, the really important stuff, like you can put, you know, shiny object syndrome onto a lot of stuff, but like the stuff that really matters is like the fundamentals, and it will continue to be. We'll definitely start diving into as much technical side stuff as we can. You know, there was a lot of interest in anything, you know, AI, machine learning. That's obviously a huge area that people are interested in learning more about. And anything automation, love to get more into that side of things. There's always interest around tools. It's always tricky trying to cover tools because a lot of them want, you know, it's like, hey, can you cover my latest platform? We were having this debate the other day. It's like, you know, someone has a platform update, they want it covered, but you know, technology is super important in all our lives, and you know, it's just sort of figuring out where that line is of where we can be helpful versus promotional for a company. But yeah, I would say we could probably do a little better job on, you know, promoting interesting features that could be very helpful to, you know, help marketers and SEOs do their jobs better.
What are you looking for in writers?
I'm looking for writers who have something kind of unique to say, I guess, at this point. You know, obviously there's going to be the need for the more fundamental basics from time to time, but, you know, I think we really want to focus on the more experienced marketer, SEO manager, you know, whatever you want to call them, you know, and just helping them navigate all the changes as they come up. You know, people who have some, you know, some length in the industry, you know, it's not like, I don't know how to say it without being mean to people, but you know, like there are a lot of younger people who come in and think they've discovered something that's been disproven years ago, and they're all about it and hyping it up. But
that's an interesting area to look at. There's always hype. There's always there's always the silver bullet or the golden spike of SEO. How do you, and this comes up every once in a while. I mean, most recently, I'd say it was around misunderstanding about EAT.
Yes. Oh, yeah.
How do you keep writers and thought leaders, the general industry meme, on track when it's moving so quickly and there's just so much flaky information out there?
Yeah, that is one of the huge challenges. So, you know, we kind of looked at that. You know, there were a lot of people talking about EAT scores and all these things that just don't actually exist, and how EAT is part of the algorithm and all this stuff. So yeah, I don't know. Then you see people like Lily Ray, who sort of cut through a lot of the BS, you know, in there. And there are a few other people. So I think a lot of that, at least on my end as an editor, has been, you know, someone will submit something, we'll go, okay, here, you know, there's no such thing as an EAT score. So it's sort of on us in that role to, you know, take it back to a contributor, and just be like, no, you know, we have to be the people that hold that line. Cause if we don't, bad information gets out there and all these misconceptions start and people start making all these bad assumptions and bad business decisions. So we want to avoid that.
You talked about writing to a more experienced audience. Now, do you mean that your target, like the direction, is going to be for people with, I don't know, 3+ years of experience in it? Or it almost sounds a little bit like there's going to be some myth busting. Like, we're in there for the people who have only got 3 months experience, but we're here to go, this mm-hmm. is crap. and this is the truth.
Yep. Yeah. You know, and looking back, you know, I think Danny Sullivan back in the day really did a good job of bringing those worlds together. I think we could do more of that, you know, providing the context for maybe people who are newer to the industry, sort of like, here's what, you know, we're going to do a little basics at the start, but then here's the meat of everything that you need to know that's changing and what we think it all means. So I think we could be doing more of that. Maybe not as long as Danny would go, but, you know, because he would do some epic posts, but there was a lot of great information in the, you know, he was probably like the gold standard as, you know, the man who came in and, you know, I feel like made the search journalism industry.
Popularized search in general, really.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, absolutely. So,
it just occurred to me, and I can't believe I missed this at the beginning. This is the second time you've filled his seat.
This is true.
Oh, yes. It's never been a direct line between Danny and you.
Mm-hmm.
But there's always been a Danny in that chair at one time. There's a Danny in that chair at one time or another. Have you thought about that? Like Danny Sullivan is a legend. So when do you start working at Google?
I guess that's next, right?
Apparently
I just follow Danny everywhere he goes, so you know.
But has that occurred to you? Like that's an enormous honor. I hadn't even seen that until just a second ago.
Yeah, I mean, in a lot of weird ways, you know, like Danny made it possible for me to be where I am right now. And I've never, like, I've had maybe two conversations or three conversations with him in my life.
Is that the weirdest thing?
That is weird, right? Like, he basically helped build this industry that so many of us now benefit from. Mm-hmm. And
I'm the same way. I've talked to him five or six times, like intimately had a real conversation with him five or six times. I only interviewed him once my entire career.
Mm-hmm.
He's impossible to interview.
Yeah. Yep. But yeah, I mean, it's huge. I mean, you know, I was at the start, it was sort of like, oh, you're the other Danny, you know, but I feel like
it's been a while now, eh?
So it's sort of like, you know, it's almost like, you know, like a chip on your shoulder for a little while. And, you know, we were direct competitors for a minute, you know, when I was at Search Engine Watch. So, yeah, but yeah, I have tons of respect for everything that he's helped, you know, build in this industry, which is a lot. And he's still, you know, still doing a lot through Google, obviously. But yeah, I mean, it's pretty huge. So that's sort of, and that was sort of the appeal too of going to Search Engine Land. It's like, this is yet another company Danny built. It has a great legacy to it. Yeah, so super proud to follow him, honestly.
Absolutely. And an interesting thing, it's absolutely worth noting, the companies that Danny built, for some reason, he got the right mix of people, and they have been the influencers in the industry. Mm-hmm. I love that Third Door is going to be having the SMX events online and opening them up for people, anyone who wants to attend. I'm really hoping that translates into people coming back to conferences when they start happening live again, because there's nothing like an SMX Advanced in Seattle. Mm-hmm. Like, the closest that you can get to it is the drunkest part of a PubCon bar when people are really talking about getting right into the meat of what they do. Cause you don't hear advanced SEOs opening up like that in any other venues.
Absolutely.
Right. Except they're sober.
Sober. So you can understand what they're saying mostly. and no one's trying to take your wallet. So like, or no one's trying to stick you with the bar bill. You got to watch out about those SEOs. They optimize everything, including their own bar bills.
They're dangerous.
They are. So do you have a, how to say this, a role vision that you see for SEL, perhaps more than one? Like, what role does a publication like SEL serve in 2022 moving forward in the search and digital marketing industry?
I think primarily, you know, we're an educator, we're an informer. You know, the way I'm, you know, I still have to flesh out the entire sort of vision, but, you know, I really see, you know, if you go back to it, like everything, creating content, it's not rocket science. It's basically just creating content that is useful and helpful to your audience. I really, you know, it sounds so cliche, but it's so true. And when you do that, the audience sort of follows you. And I've seen that time and time again, at all the places I've worked. You know, content-led strategies work, especially if you know who your audience is and who you want to be reading that content. So, you know, we may be targeting, you know, people who've been in the industry for 3 to 5 years as our core, but we recognize that, you know, there's a lot of people starting out in SEO, who need resources that are good resources and trusted resources. And I really want that to be Search Engine Land. You know, whenever you're searching for informational searches, we should be the brand that comes up. You know, there are some companies that I prefer not to see. I won't name them, but I'm sure you can guess who they are that rank really well for a lot of terms. And that when that happens, bad information propagates into the pool, which is never a good thing. So yeah, I want this to be like the trusted resource. When people want an answer, they should be coming to us.
We're really short on time. I got one last question for you, then I'm going to hand it over to Dave, who might have a couple more questions. Sure.
Are you looking for the best in WordPress speed, security, and scalability? WP Engine is a digital experience platform for WordPress, powering digital experiences for large brands around the world. With easy-to-use site management tools and powerful do-it-your-way development features, WP Engine gives you the flexibility to build it your way. Improve your SEO and conversion rates with a faster site on WP Engine. Learn more on WPEngine.com.
As technology is changing, do you see the way we present information? Like Search Engine Land has been a print publication with videos and online conferences and virtual conferences and stuff. But for the most part, when I think about Search Engine Land, I see a print publication. Do you see any importance, or is there any push to change the way or use new technologies to present information through that platform?
That's a good question.
Might it happen, I guess.
Might it happen? I don't know. I sort of approach things from publishing, media publishing standpoint. Anywhere you can reach your audience is a good thing. I would never say no to an idea of, trying new stuff. One area I'd love to see SEL do a little more on is maybe video. Maybe do a little more expansion in that area, because not everybody likes to read, and there are some people who do make a pretty good living off of videos and then sell their company to SEM Rush. So, but anyway, so. Anyhow, should I just mic drop there and we'll stop? Okay.
No, Dave's got a couple questions for you.
I do have one more. I know we got to let you go, but one that's sort of like that I'm really wondering about in sort of the trajectory. Like I remember when I was starting, I know we're going back to like the early 2000s here. Mm-hmm. It did take 3 to 5 years experience to even be decent. I mean, well, I guess you could be decent earlier because SEO was really simple back then, but you sort of needed that experience and you needed a broad sort of swath. And I wonder when you're thinking of the content strategy and sort of the level with the specialization that's going on now, mm-hmm. with people going like, okay, I'm a Python programmer who's now doing like this.
Right.
Are they elevating faster? Are we now looking and going, okay, we actually have intermediate and advanced content. And it's for people who've been doing SEO for 6 months. Right, like that because they're so specialized that this piece of content is just for them.
Yeah, and it is tough too. It's not really a year-based thing anymore. It's more just how smart are people? Like there are some people who've been in the industry for like 2 years and are doing some really super smart stuff, and like you give them a problem, they'll solve it in 24 hours. Whereas like you give the same problem to someone who's been in the industry for maybe 10, 15 years, it'd be like, I don't know how to fix this. So it's not and I probably shouldn't have said it as like 3 to 5 years. It's maybe more like, beginner, intermediate, advanced, because that is a better breakdown because everybody learns at a different pace, for sure.
Well, and I think your periodic table is a great introduction into that.
Oh, sure.
Right, for people.
Oh, absolutely. Yep.
Well, indeed, you've gone from a publication that had to publish a massive encyclopedia size ebook on it down to a publication that's distilled it into, the periodic table.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Concision. That's the first thing editors always say to me. Concision, Jim.
Right, less. Yes.
So well done, SEL.
Yes.
We are so shy of time, and I know you got to go. You got a new kid. Congratulations.
I do.
You said that at the outset. But are you looking forward? Are you excited?
Yes, about everything. Last year was a year on many fronts. I'm already off to a great start with the new job. Obviously, everything with having a kid at my age is interesting. 44 years old, have my first kid. So, all that is just super interesting. It's like, I'm just trying to watch her learn how to walk and eat. And I'm just like, wow, you sort of lose sight of like all the amazing stuff that we're able to do as human beings when you're like, you have this little blob that doesn't know anything about anything. So lots of exciting stuff to come on the work front, and just seeing my baby grow.
Congratulations, man.
Doesn't get much better than that.
Danny Goodwin, new editor at Search Engine Land. Again, congratulations on a tremendous career, and thank you for the tremendous career and the contributions to the industry. And good luck, man. Like,
thank you much.
I really look forward to seeing what happens with Search Engine Land. Watching what happened with Search Engine Journal was amazing. Again, from your cousins over here at Webmaster Radio, congratulations.
Thank you so much. Thanks for having me. And I guess the next time I'm on the show, it'll be to announce my next major next major chapter of my life. But
when you're going off to Google.
That's, yeah, when you move to Google.
Who knows?
Danny Goodwin, thank you so much for spending time with us
today. Thank you so much. Thanks, Jim. Thanks, Dave.
Friends, that was Danny Goodwin, the new editor over at Search Engine Land. Go check out his columns, and that was wonderful. I haven't talked to Danny, and I don't know how long, but it's been way too long. That was so cool.
That was. I mean, Danny's always great to chat with, but it's fun that we're sort of one of the people that gets to like chat with him. One of the first groups that gets to chat with him whenever he's making a big move.
One of one heck, to another. As far as I know, we were the first to actually get the interview on this one. And, you know, it doesn't sound like it was. It sounded like he was promoted to a position he wasn't so comfortable in, and it's not an angry separation as much as it is, I don't want to do this crap. I'd rather do that crap. And you know what? I'm really glad that Danny has that that freedom in his life where he can choose. I want to do this over that. That having that freedom alone is an accomplishment, eh?
Well, indeed. And I think we can all sort of sympathize with how that happens. And I think his analogy to the frog is right, where it's just like, and it's one more, and it's one more. And then soon you realize, and all of them seemingly good. Oh, it's more responsibility. Oh, it's probably a slightly higher pay, right? Like, it's probably all of these things that just, since I was born, I'm told are a good thing. People are trusting me with bigger decisions, but then actually realizing, oh, but I don't actually like what I'm doing anymore. And then, you know, so happy for Danny that he went, yeah, time to jump out of the pot, right? Like, it's time to get out of there.
There's a wisdom to be able to see that, yeah. I really admire. So it's just going to change the landscape. Like, when he came into Search Engine Journal, not that Search Engine Journal was bad before, it wasn't, but it became much, much better after Danny came in. You reckon the same thing's going to happen around SEL?
I suspect it probably will. And that's only my faith in Danny, because you're right, at the time. And I remember when he made that move, and I was like, oh, I don't think that's a good idea. Like, it was a little tarnished. Like, he talked about it, like SEJ didn't have the like best of reputations at the time for producing like quality content. And he turned them into one that was one of the foundational. They were often the ones where I read a story first. Yeah. Was there. So yeah, hopefully he just carries that forward and maybe adds a little variety. I love that he's talking about bringing in authors again, because I think that is one of the things that was missing. Like, SEL turned into like a great source of news, but so Search Engine Roundtable, speaking of Barry, like, yeah. Both of them are great for just like news, but adding that, you know, sort of flavor. But I like that it's targeting sort of what it sounds to be more intermediate, advanced, but with some specifics.
Well, it's like hiring opinion writers on a newspaper. You know, people who have enough life experience, or in this case, industry experience, to say, yeah, this is what this means and how I feel about it.
Right.
And to edit that is a particular skill, because, like he was saying in the last part of the interview, like, there's just so much weird interpretation of information that's out there. And I don't want to say it's right or it's wrong or whatever, but the interpretation might lead others astray and push them into making less than good business decisions.
Right. I think it's great that he understands the burden of that responsibility as well. And it did come across that he did. And I think any editor in our space needs to understand that when it goes wrong, if you give bad advice, people can go bankrupt. Like, yep. it can be that horrific. So,
you know, the one part of the interview that I really wanted to dive into that I don't think we got a chance to, we got to bring him on again, was this era of change that we're in, and that how that's going to transform how all of us tell stories to our audiences. Mm-hmm. I think he's got a platform that has so much gravitas under him now. Search Engine Land is it's the publication of record, I would suggest. Mm-hmm. And I'm really curious if we're going to be seeing VR presentations a year and a half from now. You know, that's the kind of thing I wanted to get at. Is this the direction where, that you think we might be telling stories in? But we'll see where that goes.
Well, and I think it matches one of the stories, like one of the things that really caught me a bit off guard, like as like a big, like, wow, that just happened. New stories, and it broke 2 days ago over at the New York Times, or at least that's where I saw it, was Microsoft's purchase of Activision.
And that changes everything, eh?
$1 billion. Like, so this is a big play on their part. And I think I don't think it's just like, yeah, we want to own these games that are going through to our Xboxes. Like, I don't think it's that limited. They obviously see something in there. I'm of course a little concerned because I'm a big fan of Call of Duty. And that's one of the Activision Blizzard franchises. But
I think we're looking at at Microsoft treating the Activision proprietary content and proprietary information much more like it did Minecraft than coming in and smashing up Call of Duty and all those great titles that Activision, World of Warcraft. I mean, Microsoft is not messing with the World of Warcraft universe because that just makes so much money.
Right.
Similarly, Call of Duty, they're not touching that. That makes so much
money. Right.
But they are touching the ability to create worlds, immersive worlds that you can move around in. Do you remember when Quake came out? Like, this is ages, eons ago. But when you were running around those hallways, like shooting up demons or shooting up other players, didn't you sort of see a shopping mall as well, where, you know, without the guns and the carnage, but there was an environment that you could move around and interact with objects in? Why can't I pick up this object and add it to my shopping cart? It happens to be a gun floating in space, but why couldn't it be a perfume bottle? You know, and I remember seeing that like 20 years ago when Quake came out, and that's where I see the new universe going to, sort of. And that's why I think Microsoft had to buy them.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think in a lot of cases with acquisitions like this, we're not just talking about purchasing sort of the property as it is. They're not just buying Call of Duty, right? And the like plethora of other games. What they're also purchasing is the ability to understand what developers are doing at a different level. Like, and these are cutting edge developers. These are the developers that are pushing hardware like to its very limits, or at least everyday hardware. I'm not talking about like ML, like 3090s or something like that, but I'm talking about like just the everyday sits in a PC hardware to be able to understand what they're doing and sort of construct the environment for that. I think is fantastic. And then to have direct access to these developers when you're going, okay, we're actually going to build a better mousetrap now. We're actually going to be adding in headsets, but not like the PlayStation one, right? Like, but like real, or we're going to be like introducing VR. How can we gamify the world? Like, how can we do that, right? Make it that, like, I'm walking around, I've got that little like lens in the top right on my glasses, right? Like, how do we gamify it to get that information? You now have access to developers that specialize in creating an environment that people inherently want to go back to over and over and over and over again in that. So I think it could be a huge thing going well beyond the scope of just games, which is, I think, what we're talking about is the Web 3.0 and sort of the next evolution in the internet.
Well, again, people might see Blizzard Activision as a game company. Microsoft doesn't. Microsoft sees them as a company capable of creating universes.
Right.
And that's what Microsoft is purchasing. Now, another bonus that might come out of this acquisition is Activision. Let's face it, Blizzard Activision has a terrible, toxic reputation. Mm-hmm. They're full of, I think, people who would be described as some of the worst people online. There's going to be a massive house cleaning, and it's going to be a kind of a toxic environment. You won't want to breathe near their building for a couple of days as the detritus gets cleared out. But I think there's going to be a major culture change at Blizzard Activism, and thank goodness.
You know, as somebody who was around with like watching Microsoft in like the 90s. I find it hilarious that right now we're going, now Microsoft purchased them so they can clean up the toxic environment that's going on.
I mean, Microsoft went through its crap too, absolutely. Yeah. But Microsoft went through its crap 30 years ago and has emerged as a corporation that understands the blunt end of a lawsuit. and it's changed its behavior because of that. So there. Okay, a couple of house cleaning stories. We got massive crawl spikes that are happening like left, right, and center on the web. But according to Google, it don't mean nothing. Well, it means something, but it's nothing to do with the obvious algorithm update that's happening. That is not happening, but it is. Something like right. that? Is that more or less how it goes?
Right. We're just fetching a monster amount of updated information for no particular reason. That's like, no, I don't think. Now, we know how Google answers questions, right? So they might view data collection different than algorithms. I know, like, as you know, I work in the machine learning space. So I know that you can treat them as data labeling, for example, can be different. And it may very well be that they've actually just got people on the ML side going, we need a mass amount of data to experiment with some stuff. That could be.
So and there was a recent core update.
There was.
They may well be filling in a data hole they need to fill.
It might be. It may also relate to, we know that Core Web Vitals is coming to desktop, coming up, right? Like that's about to happen. And they might just be going, oh, okay. You know, we need to do mass crawling to see how that's going to impact. But to me, that's algorithmic, right? Like to me, I view that as this does relate to an algorithm change. You might not be collecting data for that change. You may be collecting data to test that change and make sure that you're not going to be like throwing out babies with the bathwater. But to me, these things all tie together. There's no way of saying we're going through the expense and effort of doing a massive crawling just for fun. Like that's not a thing that I could see Google doing. So there's something they're doing, whether it's giving their engineers something to play with, like a new sort of updated fresh index to go, okay, now test new systems for news, but we're not actually building it right now. So that might be what they're saying. But I guess we'll see, but we'll never really know. There's going to be an update in the next week or two. There just will be. Like this isn't Dave's genius predicting the future. This is Dave going, there just is. that's just a thing that will happen. And so, you know, will it relate to this or not? It'll be interesting to see how that plays out. But
Absolutely. Did you see the thing Google published? I think it was 2 days ago. Trying to explain the difference between general crawling and discovery.
Mm.
There's two types of crawls. There's Google crawling to basically re-render your pages and see what's there, and there's Google crawling to discover new information.
Mm-hmm.
And if you look at your you have to go to settings to see this, but if you're in Google Search Console, click on settings, you can see a crawl report. And in the crawl report, you will see a certain amount of time was devoted to discovery and a certain amount of time was devoted to just general crawling. Google had to issue this announcement to clear it up because they have another program that pushes content to mobile devices called Google Discover. And Google discovered that SEOs don't have a clue on how to advise clients about what Google Discover is, partially because when you look at your crawl report, you see two different crawls. One is your general crawl, the other is discovery. Google, I know that you have really big sprawling campuses, and sometimes it's hard to see what the people over on the left side of the campus are doing. But if you're on the right side of the campus, you should really consult with the people on the left side of the campus about what they're naming stuff. Because when you go on to talk about stuff that's been named for something else entirely, you're going to confuse people. And this is why engineers need babysitters.
Mm-hmm.
And they're not called babysitters. They're called managers.
Well, and it's funny. I remember when Lily Ray came on our show last, and she corrected me, and rightfully so, because I had called the Discovery Network, just to add an extra level of confusion, because Google likes to do that apparently. So we've got Discovery as the metric, as you're talking about. You go to Search Console and it's mm-hmm. as Discovery. This is the crawl. And then towards the left-hand side, or you know, to the, you know, you can look at your stats for the Discover Network, right? So you can see, okay, on mobile. But if you go into ads, the ads are Discovery. Again, like they've gone back to Discovery. And that's where I'd made that hiccup, is I'd called it Discovery. And Lily Ray was like, no, it's Discover. And it's like, oh, right, I'm thinking of ads where it's called Discovery, but to hitting the Discover Network.
This might seem like a minor point, Google, but it's not. Like, this is actually people, language is important. And we use it because it tells us what we're talking about.
Yeah.
Like, help us out here, would you? Okay. We've gone pretty much full clock. There's a quick announcement I have to make about the future of this show and Webmaster Radio in general. It's been a long time. Virtually every Thursday over the past 17 years, Dave Davies and I have presented Webcology as a live webcast that's recorded and distributed as a podcast. For almost two decades, we've had to build our businesses and our private lives around an hour of conversation each week, and I've loved it. I think I speak for Dave. Dave's loved it. We've really enjoyed doing this. We've broadcast from major conference conventions. We've found quiet spaces in innumerable airports and cyber cafes to talk to each other and around the and to talk to the world. The business model that has kept Webmaster Radio, WMR, Webcology, and you know a few other shows broadcasting is broken. We were designed and made to put commercials in and around. That's why Webmaster Radio has continued to produce this show over the last 17 years. And that's been contingent on a really healthy conference ecosystem. And as you know, people know, the last couple years, 3 years, we haven't had that. Webcology is produced for free by Webmaster Radio. One of the only shows that doesn't have a production cost attached to it directly. But there are production costs, and they have to be paid. They're no longer being paid by commercial advertising. We are going to be looking for direct sponsors. If you are even potentially a direct sponsor, you're likely going to be getting a call from us pretty soon, or from an agent for us pretty soon. We want to keep Webcology going. We think... We know we have a large audience that is still growing. We've not ever gone down in audience month after month after month. We've only gone up. And we want to keep this show alive. We're going to be asking for sponsorships. I don't know what that's going to look like, whether that's going to look like micro sponsorships or major sponsorships. Cool thing about this and a couple other shows on the network is we've never been beholden to sponsors. We've never had to worry about what we've said about anyone. And I think it's produced a very open and honest show that people enjoy because they know there's not a lot of BS. And I want to keep it that way. But the fact remains, we need to get sponsors or we need to go silent. That's just the way it is. Mm-hmm. This isn't imminent. It's not happening tomorrow, but it is happening. And, if Webcology is going to stay on the air, then we're going to need to find a way to fund it, beyond, the old business model that simply can't work anymore. Sorry to say that, but it's where it is.
That is where it is.
Anything you want to add to that, Dave?
No, I think you covered that pretty thoroughly. Hopefully it all works out, because I have, and I hope our listeners as well, I've really enjoyed the last large number of years. And if nothing else, you know, pleasant byproduct for personal byproduct is it made sure that at least once a week I went, okay, you need to be updated on everything, because Jim's going to ask you about stuff. you're going to ask him about stuff. So, and hopefully our audience has had that opportunity week over week to just make sure that, okay, there's one place you can go to get updated on sort of what's going on in the space.
Well, you know, when I think of the show, I think of it as being so much fun, but it's been such an honor to do this show too.
Yeah, absolutely.
So I want to keep it going. I want to retire with this show still going, and I want to hand it off to somebody else. That's what I wanted to do for the longest time. And I really hope we can do that. So yeah, friends, if you see a Patreon or anything, I don't know where we're going with this yet. We just had this conversation yesterday, the Call to Jesus conversation yesterday. So we'll see what happens, but it's again going to happen. Okay. On behalf of Dave Davies from Beanstalk, Beanstalk Web Marketing, this is and Beanstalk Internet Marketing, this is sorry about that, Dave.
No worries.
On behalf of Dave Davies from Beanstalk Internet Marketing, this is Jim Hedger from Digital Always Media. For goodness sake, get vaccinated. We want those conferences back badly. Stay safe, stay well, be good to each other, rank well, and we will talk to you next week. Be well.
The opinions expressed in this WMR.FM program are those of the guests and hosts and do not necessarily reflect those of the staff and management of WMR.FM. Any rebroadcast, republication, or retransmission of this program without proper consent is prohibited.